Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we're going to start today with local reaction to Donald Trump's call to ban all Muslims from entering the United States. Now, if for some reason you missed what he said, here it is again. Trump speaking yesterday at a Pearl Harbor Day rally in South Carolina.
And it's impossible to watch this gross incompetence that I watched last night. And we put out a statement. Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on?
Now, when Trump talked about the, quote, gross incompetence he watched on Sunday night, he was referencing President Obama's Oval Address to the Nation, where the president took a different approach, which included calling on Muslims to fight radicalization.
To speak out against not just acts of violence, but also those interpretations of Islam that are incompatible with the values of religious tolerance, mutual respect, and human dignity. But just as it is the responsibility of Muslims around the world to root out misguided ideas that lead to radicalization, it is the responsibility of all Americans, of every faith, to reject discrimination.
President Obama on Sunday. So how are members of the local Islamic community reacting to all of this? What is your reaction? Call us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Well, joining us now is Nadeem Mazin. He's a Cambridge City Councilor and founder of Mass Muslims, a political advocacy group for the Muslim community. Nadeem, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, when you heard this tape from Donald Trump, what was your first reaction?
You know, I've long held that I don't think Donald Trump actually believes the things he's saying.
That seems pretty generous.
Well, you know,
because he keeps saying them.
The pattern I see is that this is obviously a xenophobe, obviously a bigot, willing to say bigoted things. But he knows he can jerk around the media, and that if he keeps escalating the tenor of what he's saying, he'll still keep getting a pretty serious amount of attention.
So, okay, before we go down that road, let me ask you though, if it's not so much that you believe Donald Trump believes what he says, what is your reaction to the fact that, let's just take the people who were in the room with him when he said it. They cheered. Doesn't that give you cause for concern?
It totally gives me cause for concern. I mean, there's people now experiencing, as a result of his statements, actual hate speech in their lives, actual violent threats, actual vandalism. There are Muslims who, when they hear something like this, they respond the way that President Obama and the Pentagon responded by saying, you cannot be putting Americans who share widespread American beliefs in danger because you want to score political points. And clearly there's a group of people who are willing to kind of cheer for anything that's outlandish and bold and extreme. But in this case, obviously, it's from the kind of the fascist playbook.
Okay. So how, for you personally right now, do you feel as if your faith is under attack?
Yes, I mean that's clear, right? When you have the Republican front runner willing to say things that are deep in fascist territory, deeply bigoted and xenophobic, not rooted in reality, and certainly not expedient for the current situation, certainly the faith and Americans who are Muslim are under attack.
So take me into the conversations that you've had around your dinner table or other members of the Massachusetts Islamic community. I mean, what are people talking about every time something like this happens in the news or on the campaign trail or in life in general?
You know, I think Massachusetts Muslims are engaging in the hard work they have been for decades. You have, of course, a large immigrant population, many of whom hold multiple jobs. You have leaders like myself and faith institution and service institution leaders doing everything from providing for homelessness and transitional housing advocacy to running large Islamic centers, right? People are exhausted just by the work of trying to grow participation, civic and otherwise, in their everyday lives and, you know, working overtime to do so. What I've been hearing, I think, is a little bit of exhaustion having to reset the record for journalists and others to remind people, you know, there's a reason the San Bernardino shooters weren't talking to people in the mosque, weren't talking to people in the community, had to hide their true intent. It's because Muslims every day speak out for peace, tolerance, and a multicultural society with strong American values. And having to remind over and over again that that is the place we need to start the conversation, that we need to move beyond to a deeper type of conversation about other American problems, gun violence and otherwise, that's hard and that's exhausting.
So tell me more about that, because even here in Massachusetts, and I use air quotes around even here in Massachusetts, I mean, has it changed all this conversation, extreme rhetoric about Islam? Has it changed sort of your daily experience of being an American in Massachusetts?
My life has changed a little bit since being in office 2 years ago, but I think also me being in office has happened in concert with other organizations becoming civically engaged, Muslim organizations yeah. becoming civically engaged, with our faith institutions beginning to build some civic and political savvy. So I think what we've felt as faith leadership in this state is that we are things are changing, but in a very productive and positive way. We're engaging political leaders. We went to the State House and had a State House day for Muslim leadership and for everyone from kids to professionals, young professionals. So that stuff for me overshadows the changes that you might see from a random event like this or a bigoted statement in the press.
Okay, let me ask you one thing specifically about what President Obama said,
sure.
right? Because, I mean, we could talk until we're all, exhausted about Donald Trump. But, I have been reading some reaction from the American Islamic community more broadly that there's a diversity of responses to the fact that the president called on Muslims to do their part to root out radicalization as well. There are some people who believe that it is not a fair call, that the same is not being asked of all Christians when someone in the name of Christianity goes and, you know, commits some kind of crime.
Certainly it's not fair. It is, I think, to be expected in the same sense that I'm expected to reset the record and remind people that Muslims in this state and all over the country are peace-loving, are evoking Friday sermons about peace and tolerance and are doing so prior and irrespective of any other attacks in the media. So this is our kind of comportment in general. I think it's a little bit unfair probably of President Obama to call on us in that way, given that we have already been a community of peace and we've already been engaging in these actions proactively. And it is also obviously not something that other communities who do perpetrate violence are held to. It's not a standard that's applied fairly across the board.
Well, we're getting some local reaction to the comments of Donald Trump about his plan or idea to ban all Muslims from entering the United States. There's been a lot of reaction worldwide, actually, to this. But let's go to the phones. Nawal is calling from Shrewsbury. You're on the air, Nawal.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. And this topic, obviously, has a lot of people concerned. I, however, have a different view. And, first of all, I'm a devout practicing Muslim, very proud to be Muslim, very, very proud to be American by birth. All my children were born here. I don't really feel threatened at all by people like the likes of Trump and his cronies who go by trying to promote hatred. I'm a businessman. I'm a consultant. I also teach. I see many, many good people around me everywhere, from all walks of life, from all types of faiths, and in my classroom, in mm-hmm. my businesses, everywhere. See, there's more good in this country and in this world than the likes of Trump and his cronies. Unfortunately, he gets a megaphone.
Nawal, forgive me for cutting you off there, but I appreciate your point, and I want to get to some other callers as well. Thank you so much for calling us. Let's turn now to Cambridge, where Peter's on the air. You're welcome to Radio Boston, Peter.
Yes, hello. Thanks so much. Well, I would look at Donald Trump in a slightly different way. He's everybody's listing him as a blowhard and an entertainer. He's not. He is a first-rate propagandist. He knows full well his audience. like Joseph Goebbels and Joseph McCarthy well did too. And my reaction is, democracy is a fragile show wherever you go. You cannot let someone like this take the reins of the political institutions or your democracy, and I don't care, under God or manifest destiny or whatever, it'll fade like an echo. And for me, I was born in California, lived a while in Canada when I was much younger, have a French mother, and I'm an American citizen. Well, am I? You know, at points I wonder about whether I really truly am or not. I'm not sure Mr. Trump, if he confronted me, would say so, but I'd go toe-to-toe with him on this. I'm more concerned about this than I have been about anything else historically in my lifetime.
Peter, thank you so much for your call. Nadeem Mazen, let me turn back to you on that, because I think Peter's hitting on something that I wonder about myself. Like, isn't it actually, ironically, a form of American exceptionalism to presume that it, being the rise of fascism, as Peter referenced, happened in Nazi Germany, couldn't happen here? I mean, there is a, I heard you say that you don't really take Donald Trump initially seriously.
It's not that I don't take the seriousness of what he said as it should be taken. I think Nawal has a point. We have faith allies. We have we will overcome. But I'm probably in a different generation than him, likely. And my generation is saying, I can imagine America, an America that doesn't actually entertain these types of positions at the highest levels of leadership at all. And in fact, to see, as Peter pointed out, some kind of form of creeping fascism become popular for a small segment of the political audience is extremely disturbing. Of course, it could happen here. And in many ways, the Bush presidency was dangerous for our foreign political stances and led to a lot of the geopolitical difficulties we're facing now. So
on the other hand, he was far more enlightened about Americans and Islam than Donald Trump is proving himself to be.
Certainly. I'm just saying that it is a form of American exceptionalism. Anything is possible here. I think a lot of people didn't think that George W. Bush could be elected, and certainly a lot don't think that Trump could be elected. Let me say this. I think in 2015, America will not elect a bigot. I just don't think it'll happen, and I think that makes Trump a liability for the Republican Party.
Let me get another call. Let me get another couple of calls in here. Mike is calling from Roxbury. You're on the air, Mike.
Hello. Yeah, I don't understand why these guys don't seem to realize that if they are causing, or that type of talk could end up leading to radicalization of people who wouldn't be radicalized. I mean, the Republicans are spewing all this stuff, and they don't realize that they are causing radicalization of people in other extremes. I mean, when it came to the abortion clinic shooter the other day, when it came to the House of Representatives member who was shot in the head a few years ago because of all the talk that was going on down back then.
That language and rhetoric has consequences that we can't always predict either. Mike, I take your point. Apologies once again for cutting you off, but we have so many people who want to have their say, and I want to get as many as I can. So let's turn to Concord now. Andrew, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Trump is certainly a blowhard. I mean, I think we also have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, just as there's bad Christians, there's also bad Muslims in this country. I mean, there's a mosque down in the Virginia area that has been looked at for funneling money to Hamas. So while your guest is certainly a peaceful man, not all Muslims are. And we do have folks in this country that are looking to do us harm. So while, you know, Mr. Trump is saying a lot of foolish statements, you know, we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
So, Andrew, let me ask you quickly then. Does that mean that that you agree in part with the proposal from Trump about banning Muslims, or is it that you appreciate
not at all. I do think we should stop immigration right now for a year for everybody until we can get a system in place that we have confidence in. I mean, there was a study earlier this fall that the TSA agents were missing 95% of the things that the testers were smuggling through security. This woman out in San Bernardino, she wasn't vetted properly. So I'll ask you, do you have a lot of confidence in the government's ability to do what they're supposed to do in terms of making sure that people are here on visas, want to be here, want to be productive?
Andrew,
to contribute to our society.
Thank you for so much for your call. I mean, if you're asking me personally, I'm just going to go out there and say, yes, I do at this point in time. But Andrew, I really appreciate your perspective, and I want to give Nadeem Mazen a chance to respond to it.
Yeah, the caller actually seemed to overlap a kind of minimized version of Trump's position pretty squarely. He said, you know, I wouldn't be for closing the borders. Let's just close them for a year. So, you know, closing them to Muslims or closing them to all immigrants. Frankly, I trust the procedures we have in place. I would love to see a vastly improved TSA and a far less arbitrary and Orwellian one, frankly. But my personal preferences aside, there are great number of leaders familiar with the how our border security works, and they seem to be confident as well. So I think these kind of ill-informed positions that say we should sacrifice some of our freedom for a little bit more security, we've heard from the four founding fathers and from a number of leaders in on both sides of the aisle today that is not a trade that's worth it, and that's not a trade that's American.
Mm. Well, interesting. And as a point of fact, one of the San Bernardino shooters, she came in on a fiancé visa, the K-1 visa, which is actually one of the most heavily scrutinized types of visas that you have to apply for to get into the United States. And yet she still did get through. So that raises a whole separate set of questions, which unfortunately we can't get to today. But Nadeem Mazen, Cambridge City Councilor and founder of Mass Muslims, a political advocacy group for the Muslim community, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, thank you for your contributions as well. Keep those comments coming either on Twitter at Radio Boston or on our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more in just a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.